So, 17 minutes on the first mile, 1654. Good morning, 7:36 a.m. on the 28th of March, 2014. And I seem to have Pandora going. Let's see if I can get it shut off. Not exactly sure why. Usually it overrides whatever's the voice map usually stops at. Anyway, I'm hiking along, and almost forgot to turn the recorder on. That's why I'm a little bit late getting started. I'm like half a block beyond the stop sign. I'm thinking about not whining about ownership anymore. I'm thinking about Cape Grace, and caution, there may be, probably will be spoilers. As the basic conceit here for Cape Grace is, son of the shaman is the shaman, and Sarah Krug is not the son. And so, legally, she can't be a shaman. And the company is going to be rather adamant that, no, we've tried this in the past and it isn't going to go because the shaman has to be the son of the shaman. That's in the contract. That's in the agreement. That's in the work rules. And the reality is that very few of the offspring of shaman even care enough or have the gift in a way that makes it significant to them. And remember, this is a relatively young colony. There's only been maybe 6 or 7 generations. This is not a common thing. There is a relatively small number of shaman to begin with. Because son of the shaman is a shaman. And you don't have to be the shaman. Now, in spite of what we learned in South Coast, Richard was rather adamant with Otto that he had to be the shaman, because for Richard, particularly in the beginning, for Richard, being the shaman was just, you know, it was another job. It was sort of an inherited position. It was in some ways, kind of a free ride, because he didn't have to be hired. He didn't have to be a fisherman, although he went on to go to sea a little bit. And over the course of his participation in that effort, he actually gained the shaman's gift, such as it is. If such a thing actually exists. And in that universe, it's very much ambiguous. Unlike Tenth Fairport stories, where it's not ambiguous, it is clearly magical, it is clearly fantastic in the sense of over pertaining to fantasy. In Otto's world, in the shaman's tales, on St. Cloud, it's very much ambiguous. It's very much a question of, did that just happen? And is it really due to some sort of magical influence, or is it really something much more basic, like intuition and luck? The growth of superstition is basically an unfounded causal relationship between action and result. In some cases, there's not even a correlation, like black cat crossing your path. So yeah, it's a And walking under a ladder is an interesting one, because if you walk under a ladder, its probability is that somebody could drop something on your head. And if you don't walk under a ladder, the chances of somebody dropping something on your head, pretty slim. Pretty darn slim. So, you know, there's that sort of two kinds of superstition, at any rate. So we have some of the story. We know some of the story. Or at least we know Sarah's part of the story. We know that Sarah thinks that her mother died in childbirth. We know that. All right. I think the way it's phrased, and I'm going to have either go back and look it up myself or have somebody else look it up for me, is where she's telling her story about how her mother died when she was very, very young. And I thought the phrase was, she died when she was having me, which implies that she died in childbirth. It could in fact be that she died a short time afterwards, complications from childbirth, which raises the question, how is that possible in a world that contains autodocs? And they do, because Richard Krug was in one. But that's what she believes. And whether or not it's true, I can play with that. Because one of the sort of the themes here is that your perspective is not necessarily reality. And so what somebody thinks is true is not necessarily true. And so we've got a couple of things that we think Sarah Krug knows. One, that her mother died in childbirth. Two, that her father, Otto, was bullied into letting the abusing husband marry her, and that she believes that the bullying was done by the guy who was the abusive husband. The reality is that no, that's not necessarily so. Now, it could very well be that he was, for lack of a better term, bullied, coerced, put in a position where he had to choose between losing his daughter altogether, a daughter who has an amazing gift, or seeing her married to somebody that might not have been his first or even fifth choice, but in fact, pretty much the only choice available at the time. And so for Otto, the choice, and this is the part that I've always had in mind about this story, for Otto, the choice has been lose your daughter or put her in a position that you're not comfortable with and may in fact be untenable. It's one of those, he did it for all the right reasons, except that it was the wrong choice. And it was later that he came to realize it was the wrong choice. It was he that later came to realize that he had to help her escape, to spread her wings and fly, and hence the raven. I believe it was a raven that he carved for her and gave to her, and which led her to finding Alice Yergon at the Union Center, the Union Hall, and signing the articles to join the crew of the Lois McKendrick. So there's a couple of things that it's rather a simplistic plot. It's how Otto met, it's not Rachel, I probably want to avoid R's, Monkpole, I've got way too many R's. Rachel and Rebecca. Sarah needed her mother's name, because I don't think I ever said is her mother's name anywhere else, so I'm free to make that up. So I need her mother's name. Perhaps Charlotte. And perhaps I'm thinking is, I'm trying to figure out where in the story we pick it up, where in the story we start. Now, I've got an opening, which is actually the ending, and then my thought is that, okay, here is Otto witnessing the pivotal moment where Sarah decides that she's going to go to space, and then we go back to where it all began. Now, I'm not convinced that that's the right structure, and I may well move that to the denouement. I may move that to the ending. This is a story about Otto that's concerning Sarah. So we're going to see this largely through Otto's perspective. It'll be third person, same as the others. I'll be close third, with primarily Otto. But I need the second plot to twist around it. I'm not quite sure what that is. And in South Coast, there were two plots. There was the fishing plot, and then there was the shaman plot. There was the Otto wanted to be a fisherman, not a shaman, and he discovered that he didn't really have a choice, that he was in fact a shaman. And his father, oddly, became a shaman after having had the title for many years and not really understanding what it was that he was supposed to be. And then later in his life, discovered that, yeah, this is something different than what I thought. So how do we deal with that? How do we manage that? What's the second plot? It may be that the second plot is personnel. It may be that the second plot is Piranha Fisheries facing a personnel crisis of some sort, where there are too many people on the planet who are not employees, and I can't imagine. Since the rule is pretty clear, since you have to be either employed by or a dependent of an employee in order to be on planet, and if you're a dependent, and you can in fact do things like open a diner or have a tavern or do other things that don't compete with the fisheries, that don't compete with the corporate master. And Piranha has had, on South Coast, on St. Cloud, has had this sort of almost, not quite laissez-faire participation. And everybody knows what the rule is, and that if you're not going to be fishermen, you're not going to go be a farmer with the other half of the co-op, then you have to get off the planet, because if you're not an employee or a dependent, you have to leave as soon as you attain your majority. Now, for most people, this is like, yes, I get to leave, because it's a corporate town, its opportunities are extremely limited. Advanced education is pretty much non-existent. Most people have a rudimentary education. And something I haven't actually talked much about once I got beyond quarter share, the faculty students, the faculty's offspring, all have school. That there is this sort of understanding that they had some sort of social activity known as education that we haven't really talked too much about on corporate worlds. And on every one, it's going to be slightly different. And I was rather purposefully vague regarding how that worked on Neris, and have actually not talked about it at all on St. Cloud. Otto doesn't seem to go to school. Otto doesn't seem to have any responsibilities beyond working with his father to become a shaman, to learn the shaman business. And he doesn't apprentice with any of the other fishermen. He doesn't. He can read, he can write, he has basic arithmetic skills. He's not stupid. How did he get those is really kind of one of the questions that hasn't answered. It hasn't been answered. Perhaps those are questions that I won't answer here either. I'll perhaps pick up where that effort would have been ended. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's because there's this period of time between the end of their schooling, their formal basic education, and the end of their high school, as it were, and majority, which is generally construed as 18. That was the rule on Neris. It might not be the rule on St. Cloud, because remember, all the planet side rules are established by the corporations. So it could be 20. And it's also entirely possible that the basic education on St. Cloud ends at 15 or 13, even. Unlikely. That's a lot to. Well, I'm biasing it toward current practice in terms of understanding the educational practice in child development, which may in fact not be the basis for the educational system on St. Cloud. Yeah, something to think about, something to ponder. So perhaps it is. What do we do with all these freeloading kids? Maybe that's the Pirano problem. Yeah, they don't want to fish. They don't want to. They're not leaving. Too young to leave. Oh, 18 minutes, second mile. Not a great day for in terms of walking, but a much better day in terms of brainstorming. Thank you for coming along with me on that ride. That was pretty useful, I think. It was at least useful for me. I hope you all found it interesting. But I am at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. It's Saturday. Woohoo! And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.